Okay, so it popped into my head again to read this story about the 84th problem. So I found a longer version that I'm going to read, and then, I'll talk about it, or we'll talk about it. So here we go. It's an old Buddhist story. So once upon a time, an affluent farmer approached Buddha with great hope. He prostrated before the sage and sought his blessings. Buddha raised his hand in benediction. This is an intense version. So he says, "Oh, venerable one, I have a major problem and I know only you can help me." So the Buddha kept quiet and the man went on to narrate that his good-for-nothing son was troubling him and that he was mad at his wife because she supported her son over him. The man said, "Do something so their minds change and they realize how much I'm doing for them." And the Buddha replied, "I can't solve this problem for you." I love this story. The farmer told the Buddha how he was worried about the upcoming harvest, as the weather didn't seem too favorable and the monkeys were destroying his crop. "I can't help you with this one either," the Buddha said calmly. Still hoping in the powers of the Buddha, he told him that many people owed him money and he was having a hard time recovering it from his debtors, and that he too owed money to lenders and creditors. He asked the Buddha if the sage could give him any remedy or amulet, or maybe today's time, a crystal. Buddha said, "I can't solve this problem for you." "What good are you then?" the man yelled. "Everyone says you are the enlightened one, and here you can't solve any of my problems. Is there absolutely nothing you can do? I'm tired of my terrible life." "You see," Buddha said patiently, "at any point in time, you'll always have 84 problems in your life." And that's just a number. You know, in certain traditions, they'll say the 10,000 things, and it just means everything, or a lot of stuff, you know. And you see this in different traditions. Just they pick a number. So there's no magic to this number. But so you'll always have 84 problems in your life, and the 84th is the key. And he says, if you solve the 84th problem, the first 83 will resolve themselves. So the man says, "Please solve my 84th problem. You know, how do I do it?" And he said, "Well, first we have to identify your 84th problem." And he said, "Well, what is it?" And the Buddha smiled and looked deeply into the man's eyes. And he said, "Your 84th problem is you think you shouldn't have any problems." You know, what a good point, right? And this is what this whole practice is really kind of gearing towards, right? We're thrown into this life, and it has its difficulties, clearly. It has its discomforts and pains and sorrows. It has all the good stuff, too, but we don't need to talk about that because we have no problems with that. But we have problems with the fact that we have problems. You know, we all kind of have this entitlement that life's supposed to make us happy, that it's supposed to be the way we want it to be. And really, that causes a lot of issues. And, you know, I'm just seeing more and more that once you just switch your mindset on these things, how much less suffering you have. As my foot cramps up. Yeah, it's not supposed to be this way. But, you know, really starting to look at this in your life, like we kind of go into life like it's a problem we have to solve. Anybody sense that? Or like that the things in our lives, the difficult, that we have to like solve these things. They're a problem, you know, a riddle that we have to figure out how we can solve it. Right? And I heard a teacher recently say, instead of looking at it like a problem to be solved, You can look at it as more like a mystery to be embraced or to go deeply into, right? You know, and this kind of gets, you know, in touch with the grass is greener syndrome, right? Because how many of us don't want our life? And I don't mean like we want to kill ourselves. Some people do, but you just don't want parts of your life or parts of yourself or feelings or states of mind or situations, you know. For a long time, I fought reality. A long time. Just like the idea of getting a real quote-unquote job. My whole life, most of my life, I was just doing things here and there. I didn't want an institution to take my time away. It's not supposed to be like that. I don't need benefits or a salary. Right? But then I had kids. I got married and I had kids and I needed to do it. And I suffered tremendously for a while. Not because I had kids in them, you know, but because I didn't want to go to work. And I felt like, how dare society or life take up my precious time? Right? It shouldn't be this way. And I was miserable going to work. But at some point, I just, okay. This is what happens. Different phase of my life. Okay, I can't stay in college phase forever. Especially if I choose to have kids. I need to be responsible. Right? But I had the idea that this shouldn't be like this. I don't want this. There's got to be a way where I can manipulate it. And then this is what we do. We try, instead of changing us to fit what life is presenting, we try furiously to change life to fit what we want. Even though most of the time, it's so unrealistic. Really, if we think about it. You know, it's so unrealistic what we try to ask of life. Ask life to give us. Life doesn't care. Right? Like, life is just what it is, and it's unfolding as it is, and yes, we can engage in it fully, and yes, we can change things here and there, but for the most part, a lot of it is just out of our control, and it is as it is. So once you get rid of that 84th problem, it's not supposed to be this way. My life's supposed to be like this. I'm supposed to be in this situation or with this person or this job or this financial situation. Then you can just be at ease. It's so simple, really. It really is so simple. Just how much are you willing to let go of yourself? Right? Because what is it that makes us unsatisfied? Me. Not me. Right? I make you all unsatisfied. Hopefully not. But ego, self, the filter that experiences life, the thoughts in the mind, right? The craving for something different. And I wasn't going to go into this today, but maybe I'll touch on it real quick. Kind of the process. And that we can really start to investigate. This is important. And this is our practice in daily life. Now, I'm not going to go through the whole thing. It's called the 12 links of dependent origination. I'm not going to go explaining it. But basically, so we have this consciousness. We have a body. Because we have a body, we have the five senses, right? Plus the sixth sense, which isn't talking to ghosts, it's thinking. But for now, let's just stick with the five senses. The five senses contact the world. Are you following me so far? Right? Pretty simple. Body has senses. The senses receive the world, contact the world. And from that contact comes feeling tone. Right? So if you hear a bird singing, right, it's such a nice there's a pleasant feeling tone. Whereas if you had construction outside, or, you know, a fifth grader practicing clarinet, or something, you know, that we consider annoying, there would be an unpleasant feeling tone. And then there's plenty of sounds we hear, maybe the fans or the whatever's on, the air or the heat. And we don't even see it or hear it, you know, because it's just neutral. And this is this is like the spot that we really want to start focusing on, is this feeling tone level. That each experience we have, it's almost like instantaneously creates a feeling tone within us, right? If you see a person that said something mean to you one time, you walk in, there's the sight, right? And then you see that person, immediately unpleasant feeling tone. And it doesn't just end there. If it ended there, we'd be like enlightened. It would be great, right? Just okay, unpleasant. We'd let it be unpleasant. It would fall away. No big deal. But what arises from our feeling tone is craving, right? If it's pleasant, how can we get more? How can we maintain this? How can I make myself feel this way more often? If it's unpleasant, how can I get away? You avoid that person, or you don't eat that food, or you try to figure out how to get away from the fifth grade clarinetist. Is that even a word, clarinetist? And this is for all the senses, right? You smell something, pleasant, unpleasant, neutral. You hear something, you see something. And it doesn't just end there. It's not just sights, sounds, smells, plus feeling tones. Then comes that craving. Me world, like I call it, right? I like, I don't like, I don't care. All right? So this is what happens every moment. And really, like, if you can pay attention, just pick a day, or if you could, this whole week, really start to notice how you have you see someone, and there's instantly a feeling tone. And then there's a reaction, a reactivity that arises. It's like a flare-up. It's like striking a match, right? And that could be for something pleasurable, you know? You walk by your freezer, and then that reminds you that there's, you know, Ben and Jerry's in there. And that's a pleasant feeling, right? So then the craving arises. Ooh. get that, you know, Ben and Jerry's going here, right? So you grab, you know, the craving comes up. And then what happens with craving? So even if a craving arises, that still isn't a problem. Ooh, Ben and Jerry's, no problem. Thinking. Grasping comes next. So we grab hold of the craving, and then it becomes who we are. And then we act on it. Right? And then, or we speak from it, or whatever. So this whole process, like, so the reactivity is the 84th prabha. Right? And there's some level of, I don't want this. Even with the ice cream. I don't want this boring, lonely feeling. Let me go eat. Because that will bring me pleasure and I don't have to feel bored anymore. And we're a society that doesn't like to be bored. We have the attention span of a chipmunk? What has a short attention span? A dog? Right? Look how quick our advertisements are, like 10 seconds, 15 seconds. If you don't catch somebody in that first 3 seconds of a video, you lose them. But that's sad. That's our attention span. All right, so really starting to notice what's happening. And in meditation, it's pretty easy because you don't have anything else to do. you could do stuff in your mind. But, you know, so you're sitting here and you're breathing and then unpleasant sensation in the knee. Ooh. Right, so there's the sensation, which is fine. It's just the contact with the world, right? Your body contacting the world, sensation, but then feeling tone. I don't like this. Maybe my knee's gonna get hurt. this can't be good for my legs. I had one person in a workshop, they're like, I had to move. I thought, you know, this can't be good, having no blood flow to my legs. And I'm like, okay, I think you'll be okay. Yeah. I think you'll be fine. You know, I never knew anybody that like went to stand up and their legs rotted, you know, or, just fell away. But so, you know, unpleasant sensation. Then there's that feeling tone. It's almost like an instantaneous, I don't like this. And then what arises? The craving. I need to move. And then the grasping. And then the action. Becoming would be the next after grasping. I mean, at least the way I explain it. Becoming for me is I become that desire. I become a person that wants to move their leg that's unsatisfied. And then I do it. You know, and then I just keep planting seeds for next time my knee hurts, I'm going to do the same thing. And we do this with everything. It's not just knee pain. It can be anxiety. It can be an annoying person. It can, you know, just be anything. So just start to notice. We're not trying to fix it, but we're starting to notice, because if we see clearly, then we don't get as stuck in our cravings, right? In the things that are the reactivity. And if we are not caught in the reactivity, then we can act appropriately to the moment, whatever, you know, to the reality of that moment. Does that make sense? So really, we're trying to meet life spontaneously and freely. Maybe that's a better way of putting it, rather than reactively or habitually or from a conditioned response. There's nothing wrong with our conditioning if we don't grab hold of it, right? And most of the time, what arises from, let's say, unpleasant, whatever it may be, is some kind of unskillful response, right? Lashing out, numbing out, running away. You know, there's many different unskillful things that we do. And we just start to see with great compassion for ourselves. This isn't about being perfect. You're not going to be perfect, sorry. Hate to break it to you, right? It's fine. We're human and that's fine. We don't have to get it right. But if we pay attention, we at least have a chance of doing something a little more skillfully, a little more wholesome, helpful, right? And if we're not so caught in poor me, then we can actually help others, which is really the point of all this. How do we reduce suffering in this world? Yes, ourselves. The less, you know, suffering and reactivity that we're caught in ourselves, then the more appropriate we can respond, and it's powerful. Somebody's yelling at you and you don't yell back and you respond differently, spaciously, compassionately, you'd be surprised. You know, if you're really angry and your reactivity's saying, call this person and curse them out, but you know, have that intention of, I don't want to cause any more suffering. And you call and you just remain open to them. And it's uncomfortable, right? It's uncomfortable to hear what you did wrong or why they're mad at you or their just crazy views maybe that they're lost in their head. But you can just say, wow, like, you know, like, sorry I feel that way. That wasn't my intention or, what, you know, whatever the situation is. And then that softens them. It's amazing what this practice can do, like, when you really start practicing. You know, just being a calm presence around people who are annoyed and stressed, it helps. You know, I have people that will be yelling at someone and then I'm next to check in with them and I'm just calm and peaceful and they know I don't cause problems and they just soften. Even if they're really in a bad mood and being really nasty, they'll soften around me. So I'm not going to feed it. I'm not going to escalate it. I'm not going to feed that in myself. And that doesn't always happen. I mean, I yelled at a manager once, maybe like 2 or 3 months ago. I got pushed a little too far that day. It's a rough day. Have some compassion, please. Right, exactly. I just teach, all right? I didn't perfect this yet. But so yeah, like really start to look at when you are suffering and see a couple things. See that 84th problem, first and foremost. That it shouldn't be this way. That I shouldn't feel this way. That my life shouldn't be like, it's not supposed to be like this. And if you can just immediately catch that and say, but this is what is. This is it. There is no other life, no other moment. It's like this. It's like this. And start to embrace and open to that. Okay. And it's not denying anything. And it's not feeling bad about feeling bad. You know? It's just, and labeling really helps. So you're extra anxious that day and you start to notice it. Whew. Wow, anxiety. Hello. Right? Just saying that. Hey, anxiety. Here you are again. Nice to see you. Sometimes you just say anything. Loneliness. Oh, hello, my good friend. How are you today? Right? I wrote a song once, and the lyric was, what was it? Loneliness. Wait. Loneliness has come again. I gladly greet my oldest friend. We talk all night as if we missed all the times we reminisced or we've reminisced. I don't know, something along those lines. But I made it a person that came to visit me in that song. And we talked. And we talked about all the times that we shared together, all those lonely nights. Right? It's a friendly approach. It's not, I shouldn't feel lonely. We're all going to feel lonely, even if you have everybody around. Because only we can experience ourselves. And that's a lonely feeling. We can try to share and we can connect with people. But loneliness isn't so bad. Maybe we can, I've heard people change it to aloneness. It's not a bad thing. It's just aloneness. We're all on our journey by ourselves. Yes, with each other, but at the end of the day, it's by ourselves, right? It's us. But anyway, really seeing that resistance, that it shouldn't be, I don't want this. I want this fantasy that I have in my mind, this fantasy life. Right? Imagine we couldn't make things up. Like a squirrel. A squirrel can't be like, if I only had a nest full of nuts right now. It's like, it didn't sound, the way that it was planned in my head. But maybe I'll use a different example next time. But, they're just right there with life as it is. Animals don't have that, I'm going to die. Or tomorrow, or maybe, by next Thursday, I'll go meet whatever, Dale, or...
You don't think they think that?
I don't think they, think, Thursday, Friday. There's no days to them.
Really?
We just make days up.
Yeah, but they have to have something in them. I've always assumed that maybe it's not, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, but they have to have some rhythm.
Well, maybe, I don't know. Right? They know when it's dark, they go to sleep, yeah. And when it's, sure. Unless you're a raccoon.
I always wonder that too, are they thinking, they go, I'm hungry, I want, or there's no thought.
I'm sure there's a thought.
I think it's just a direct, and that's kind of, we're not trying to be animal-like. Yeah. I don't want you guys going around barking at people and whatever, peeing on the trees and stuff. But I think to have that, they're not thinking, I'm in a world. Like a fish isn't thinking, I'm in an ocean right now. There's no separation between the fish and the water it swims in. Does that make sense? It's not like, ooh, this water is really nice. Like, they don't even have a clue what water is, because that's their world. And they're at one with it. Or, you know, they're fully immersed in it. There's no separation. And we're like that too, except we have a mind that separates. It's just our mind that creates that separation. And deep meditation kind of, and this is a little more deep than we need to go, but those boundaries can dissolve in meditation, in deep experience of meditation. The boundaries that the mind creates between self and world, inner and outer, they can just fall away. And you see that it's not the way you think it is. But we can, you know, try moment by moment to be like the fish or like the squirrel, and just be right there. When you're hungry, eat. When you're thirsty, drink. When you have to go to work, go to work. When you're driving, just drive. When you're training, right, just train. When you're reading, just read. When you get it. I'm not going to say everything we do. But to really just be fully there, that's the whole training. When we're sitting here, what are we trying to do? Be fully here. Relate directly to the immediacy of our experience. Because if we're fully involved in that moment, we're not caught in the 84th problem. And because we're not caught in the 84th problem, we suffer a lot less. We don't have that extra suffering. There's just this and what I'm doing. There was one Zen teacher just said, chop wood, carry water. To live simply. That doesn't mean we still can't have all these extra things like jobs and friends, but just live simply. Meaning, directly relate to that moment. Whatever flavor it is. Right? And once you learn to like sit, and when you really practice sitting for a while, you can, one, notice when feeling tones arising and reactivity, but two, you're spacious enough to hold it and to not get swept away. You could be super angry and just know that anger's present. And relax with it and be at ease anyway. And then respond appropriately. This isn't superhuman abilities. You can pay attention, right? Each one of you knows what you're thinking, right? If I ask you to pause and look at your mind, are you all capable of knowing what's arising in your mind? Are you capable of being aware of what you're feeling emotionally? Are you capable of being aware of what you say? Or what actions you take? Right? Yes, I hope.
Yes.
So, you already have everything. You already have everything you need to be free from your suffering. It's just, again, I think I just said this in this class. I don't know, all my classes blend together. How much of yourself are you willing to let go of? Because it's the self that gets mad. It's the self that doesn't like something. It's the me world. It's the craving. Whatever word makes you understand. It's the reactivity that has the problem. Mind. And the good news is that you're not those thoughts. You're not those reactions. You're aware of them. You can become them if you want. But you can also just say, thinking. Thank you. But I'm so lonely. Thinking. Thanks for that opinion. Yeah. Ben and Jerry's. Maybe we can have the Ben and Jerry's. Yeah, you can work that out with your mind. But to be the owner of the thoughts rather than the slave to them. That's what we're doing. That's what we're doing. So why don't we try to do it? Right? Any questions before I start? Comments? Sharing? It's okay to talk. I won't tell who's the one talking on the recording if you're... Good. So let's sit and let's see what kind of 84th problems arise. Fair enough. Okay, let's get the timer going. So remember, by the third hit of the bell, try not to move. And this is especially important for today's meditation. Try to just be still in your body, no matter what. No matter how itchy you get, no matter how much your knee hurts, let's try to be still. All right. So we'll start with the bell. Take a listen. We start today with the three breaths. So nice deep inhale through the nose. And then let's blow out the mouth like we're blowing out of a straw. Nice long exhale. When you finish breathing in again, feeling a little deeper, and blowing out slowly, same way. Again, last time, when you finish, no rush. Biggest breath of the day. And the longest exhale possible. Breathing out all the way. And then naturally breathing in and out of the nose again. Just allow the body to soften as well. So relax everything. Soften the face, the jaw, separate the teeth if they're touching. Drop the shoulders, relax the hands. Softening the chest, especially the center of the chest, both physical and emotional softening. We close off a lot at the center of the chest. But whatever we don't feel will manifest somewhere. Will grow in the depths and in the dark. So we want to make sure that in meditation we're willing to feel whatever's there in this moment, whatever wants to come up. Whatever the feeling tone may be to those feelings or emotions. All they can do is feel a certain way, so you don't have to be afraid. The worst they can do is feel very unpleasant. If that's it, then they have to stop. Sure, the 84th problem doesn't creep in. I don't want to feel this. I shouldn't have this feeling. I don't want to go through this. I relate directly to whatever's arising. Soften the belly. This is a big one. We are always trying to hold it in and tighten it, but for now, just let it all, just completely soften. So when you breathe in, it'll expand like you're filling a balloon. Relax your hips. Make sure you're not lifting your legs off of the cushions or the mat. Let them just flop down. So everything in the body is completely at ease, completely still. Now let's start with the body. Let's just look at the sensations or observe the sensations as they arise. And noticing the feeling tone of each one. So maybe right now you notice a pleasant sensation of relaxation. Maybe there's just a coolness or a stillness. And notice that that feels good. And maybe there's the thoughts, I want to feel like this forever. How can I stay in this calm, meditative state all the time? I just notice this process happening. Maybe on the other hand, there's an itch or a really sore place, like your back, your shoulder, your knee, your foot. Just a really unpleasant or weird sensation. And try to see the difference between, yes, unpleasant sensation, and then the feeling about it. The feeling tone of, I don't like this. And then watch all the thoughts come up. This staying still is so stupid. I'm going to move. I need to scratch this itch or move my leg. Watch that reactivity arise and fall away. Is the pain or a scratch or itch, rather, that unbearable? What happens if you just relax and feel it? How long will it last? We have to become curious. Without the 84th problem, what is it? And can you relate directly to it? With friendliness, with spaciousness. And then noticing some of the neutral stuff that maybe you didn't even realize. Ignoring, because it's not exciting or painful. Much of our experience is neutral and we miss it. Maybe feeling the hands on the knees, or the feeling of your shirt on your skin. Gentle, cool air kind of blowing on your face. Maybe just the feeling of your tongue resting in your mouth. Your whole body is full of sensation or potential sensation. So realize how much you're missing. Distracted by pleasant and unpleasant. Try to light up the other nerves, so to speak. Feel your toes. Feel your right elbow. Come up to the ears. Maybe you can feel them, maybe not. Continue to be still and stay relaxed, and just receiving all three kinds of sensations with equanimity, as if they were equal. And really, they all do have the same flavor, which is impermanent. Instead of getting frustrated and running around and running away and trying to hold on and push away, we can just relate directly to each thing as it arises and receive it in an open way, because it will change. We don't need to go crazy for pleasant. We don't need to be anxious or have aversion towards unpleasant. And we don't need to ignore the neutral. This is an amazing quality of mind to cultivate. Very helpful quality of mind. So from the body, let's just listen to the sounds with that same attention. investigating. Maybe we hear the song and it reminds you of a memory or of a friend. There's a pleasant feeling tone to it. And you want to hear more of the song. Or maybe you hear the air that's blowing. And there's a feeling of aversion. It's too cold in here. Why is that thing still on? Maybe I should get up and tell them to turn it off. But then let that go and go right back to just the sounds themselves without analyzing the sound, without the story. The feeling tone may still be there, but you leave that alone too. The sound itself is not unpleasant or pleasant. It's our reactivity that sets that off. It's our filter. Just sound. That's it. Coming, going, done. So let your ears be open and just allow all different sounds that arise, let them arise, and when they're done, let them go. And keep really going to that direct experience of the sound. Really hear it. Really hear what you're hearing. What is it? Look carefully. Maybe a fun question would be, where is it? Where is that sound? Maybe even more interesting question is, are the sounds inside or outside of your awareness? Can you separate you from the sound? Or do they arise together? What's really happening? We never look. So we can leave the sounds for now, and we'll do the same thing, but listen instead to our mind. Or put another way, observe our thoughts as they arise. And the mind is a much more juicy place, so when you have a thought, there's usually feelings associated with those thoughts. So really interesting to start to see that. Maybe the mind's thinking of all the things that you have to do later, and there's a feeling of unpleasant. There's an anxiousness or stress. The mind creates something and the body reacts. Then the mind creates more stuff based on that reaction. See how this stuff happens. And maybe you have moments of no thought. That brings you pleasure, it's pleasant. Wow, I'm doing it. I finally get it. How can I keep this? And also notice if there's any of the 84th problem. My mind shouldn't be this way. It's not supposed to be busy. I'm not supposed to have thoughts. How do I fix this? You don't. Just thinking. What's there to fix? For the last bit of time, let's just open the awareness to include everything we went through. So this panoramic view of experience in this moment. The sensations, the emotions, the sounds, the thoughts, all the feeling tones of all of those things, all the reactivity. Hold it all with ease, with warmth. And remain upright. Remain upright and relaxed. No matter what arises, welcome all experience. We're not trying to feel good, we're just trying to get better at feeling. Feeling whatever. Experiencing whatever. It's as if we become transparent. And those boundaries dissolve, and there's just this, as it is. Not anything to solve, but just something to embrace and be. Work with. And in a moment, I'll hit the bell again. Try to hear the sound directly. Don't get caught in the feeling tone of the sound. Just try to really focus on the sound itself, truly hearing it. Take a listen. So all together we can take a nice deep inhale in the nose, out the mouth. And very slowly you can start to move a little bit. Maybe stretch, scratch, if you need. And then when you're ready, you can open the eyes. So how are we doing? That's right. You find that you straighten them and they feel good, and then you go back to your position, and then it's right where you left off.
Yeah,
oh, you kept them straight.
The whole time, which I usually like 10 minutes in, we should like.
And it's not as you see that it's not like you can still be at ease. It's unpleasant.
Right.
The unpleasant won't go away. But the extra suffering, the I don't like this. If we don't feed that, then it's just unpleasant. And that is extremely powerful to bring into your life, because when life hands you something really painful, you've already been practicing opening up and embracing pain and training your nervous system. Couldn't get that word out. To be relaxed when you feel uncomfortable. Right? And then it passes. I think things pass quicker, at least after 12 years of doing this. I really feel that I don't feed stuff. I might act, you know, unskillfully from time to time, but I don't fester in it. I don't obsess over it. I don't give it more than what it, you know, than what needs be. I'm angry, I know, in about 30 minutes, I'm not going to feel this angry anymore. I don't have to think that, I just know it. So then I just breathe with it, and I feel highly uncomfortable for 20 minutes, and then the mind calms down. And then you have that conversation, or you do that, whatever, you know. So the more you relate peacefully to your life, moment by moment, the more peace that you'll have in your life. Right? You're just planting seeds for future peace. So don't look down on a moment of pausing, a moment of letting go of a thought or a craving or an aversion or just labeling a thought. All that stuff is really starting to plant seeds for a new way of relating to your life that will bring you that profound okayness that I talk about. All right, now life is like this. So keep practicing. I have the guided meditations on my site. I put these talks up on the site with the guided meditation, obviously. So, you know, whatever I can do to support your practice, let me know. If there's anything else that would be helpful. But other than that, it's up to you. I wish I could go to your house every day and say, all right, sit the hell down, shut up, stop complaining, and meditate. Okay?
I wish you could too.
Well, for a price, I could. I'll come over and I'll just stand there with a stick and just whack you when you're doing something unskillful. So on that note,
thank you, Mark.
I'll see you next time.